Hello and welcome to Witchy Woman History. I am your host, Danae Sweet, and this is Season 1, Episode 2. So even after like almost 5 years of doing podcasts, this new one is scary as fuck to me for some reason. I got really comfortable with Witchy Woman podcast and my audience, and I knew what you guys wanted, and I was able to kind of adjust what I wanted to share and also what you guys wanted and kind of tailor my episodes to that. But this is so scary. This is the second one of a new one. So I haven't even looked at numbers of listeners or anything because I really don't want that to be something that drives the show. I want to share stories that educate and maybe even inspire others to be the type of person that doesn't fit into a nice, neat box that the patriarchy wants us to fit into. Like, we should be feral. Dare to be intelligent. Dare to care about humanity. To throw out expectations of others and to be that person in someone's life that shows others how to live unapologetically themselves. Every day I work on being that kind of person. I really want to be, you know, living my life completely unapologetically to my best, you know, to doing my best. That's what I mean. I want to do my best for me for once. And I think that's something that I've learned in the last like few years through the podcast and through other stuff is that I have been trying to live my life the best way I thought others would perceive me in being successful or happy or whatever. And, you know, I definitely wasn't living my life 100% for other people, but there was a large chunk of my life that I was. And I think I just want to say, fuck that. I'm going to live my life how I want it. And I also am going to do things that make me specifically happy and not feel guilty about that. And that is something I'm working on in therapy and working on just on the daily. And of course, I have shit days. I do. Everyone does. But anyway, I digress. Today I'm going to tell you the story of Hypatia. But first I want to share with you some stories from the present that I guess I shouldn't have been so shocked to read, but I was. The long ago witch trial times and subsequent murder of people is not safely buried in the world's past, but completely alive and gaining momentum in some areas. And I think I'll start a segment called Witch Hunts Today, okay? This is going to be a big trigger warning for murder and violence, like unaliving. So if this is something that murder is going to upset you, definitely fast forward along a little bit before that way you don't have to hear this story. But let's spin the globe over to South Africa to the village of Mama Mulele Limpopo. I'm so sorry if I didn't get that right. A woman in her early 70s was walking her way home from a visit to a local clinic. So imagine her skin weathered from sun exposure and aging. She may have had a little shuffle to her step from some arthritis and stiffness, and she probably had some missing teeth. At some point on her walk, she was confronted by a 35-year-old male accusing her of witchcraft. The elderly woman didn't stand a chance against the man, and while she called out for help, he smashed her skull in with a rock. Yeah, a rock. This information came from an article dated 16th of November this year. This fucking year. That's awful. Another instance I found was in 2022 of four men who killed an 88-year-old woman named Menundu because they thought that she was a witch. They decided because she was wrinkly, had missing teeth, and looked old, that these were things that obviously defined her as a witch. And because they were having things going wrong for them in their personal lives, that she was obviously the reason and that she had to die for being an accused witch. They trapped her in her little hut and lit it on fire in the hopes of burning her alive, but she miraculously escaped. The article didn't say how, but it said she escaped. But they ended up recapturing her and drowned her in a barrel of fucking water. Yeah, a barrel of water. What is even more fucked up than that is that these people, three of these men, were related to her. And the other man, well, that was her neighbor. And he told the police that after they captured her, that some villagers cheered them on and no one tried to help her. These men were all sentenced to life in prison, but it doesn't seem to be a deterrent for these kinds of killings, because I found a lot of articles about women and some men being killed for being accused of witchcraft. And while it doesn't, like, the area doesn't condone that, it definitely isn't doing a lot to stop it. So I was looking up things about the area and statistics, and South African Police Service reported that in 2019-2020 statistics that there were 197 witchcraft-related crimes against people. They have a 65-year-old Witchcraft Suppression Act that defines witchcraft and also sets some consequences for accusing someone of witchcraft and that accusation leading to someone's death. So if you accuse somebody of witchcraft and they haven't done any and you kill them, then you can go to jail. But what that bill really does, it just outlines how to tell who a witch is in their society and what you can do about it. I have the statistics that I just mentioned, and I have the articles, and I will put those in the show notes so that if you want to peruse them, then you definitely can. So these communities are highly superstitious. Anyone that is elderly has the physical traits of being a so-called witch there. They have wrinkles, missing teeth, yellowed eyes, and other physical traits of the elderly. Those with dementia are especially at risk of attack there. Another group of people being accused of being witches are those with albinism. Is that how you say it? Albinism. The threats and instances of violence against the elderly and other minority groups in that area have caused some to just up and fucking leave their homes. They just are leaving because if they stay, they're probably going to get accused of witchcraft at some point there, and that is very, very dire. It's fatal. It blows my fucking mind. I know I shouldn't be surprised by this, but fuck. And when I Googled, like, witchcraft killings, you know, around the world, there were so many entries. Google it. Just Google it and see what you can find. And put, like, the year in. Put 2023 in there. That way you get current things. It's scary. So it's all a similar plot, though, isn't it? Someone is different, and that makes someone else uncomfortable. And this leads to them making them into some kind of character that practices witchcraft or something quote-unquote evil and is responsible for whatever is going on in the accuser's life. It makes me fucking sick to read these stories, but it's important to know that we aren't living in a post-witch hunt world. This is happening all over the globe. I know it's not at the scale of the actual witch hunts, you know, in history. However, it's alarming to know how much of this is still going on. And I'm going to share these current stories with each historical story that I share so that we don't forget that this is still happening to all kinds of people. Okay, so that was super depressing. But let's get on to the story of Hypatia. So Hypatia was born a female, born in 355 CE in Alexandria, Egypt, and was the daughter of Theon the of Alexandria. I tried to find a mention of who her mother was, but unsurprisingly, I found that historians aren't sure who she is or just left it the fuck out. I found that Hypatia was raised by her father, who wanted to make her quote-unquote a perfect human, to which he defined that by being physically and mentally healthy. Her father was a mathematician and astrologer who was the last known member of the Alexandrian Museum. The Alexandrian Museum was like the heart of the city, and it was a place for scholars to teach and to be taught. Theon taught Hypatia all he knew about math and the planets. He also thought that the skill of public speaking was very important for her, and she learned how to basically work a crowd. She was amazing at it, and he taught her that. She grew up around other important men in Alexandria and became well known for her intelligence and charisma. She worked with her father on updating old textbooks on geometry, algebra, and astronomy. Because it was a man's world, and women, you know, weren't published or taken seriously very much at this time, some historians theorized that book three of her father's version of Ptolemy's Almagest was actually the work of Hypatia. Yay, patriarchy. She worked tirelessly on preserving the Greek system of mathematics and astronomy in times where Christianity had been totally given it the side eye. Like, really? Yeah. Preserving texts and building on those ideas were her life's work. Basically, she was a smart, charismatic woman that surrounded herself with influential men, making her influential. She used that, which is amazing that she's like, I have a platform, let me fucking use it. So she worked on preserving that Greek system, even though Christianity and the church was frowning upon any of those old traditions and those old systems, because of course they want to fucking replace it with their own shit, right? So she ended up becoming the world's leading astronomer and mathematician of her time. Being a woman with this notoriety and title brought with it many, many students, to which she shared her knowledge with freely and very enthusiastically. She seemed like, from what I read, is that she enjoyed teaching. She wanted to spread knowledge that she had gained to other people. There were even letters from one of her students, Synesius, I think that's how you say it. They indicate that these lessons included how to design an astrolabe, a portable astronomical calculator that would be used until the 19th century. That's amazing. One area that she became a leading expert in was Neoplatonism, which I literally had to search the words Neoplatonism for dummies to get a rough understanding of what the fuck it is. Basically, like, this is what I can Google it. If you're smarter than me, you'll probably understand it better. But basically, it's the teachings of Plato version 2.0. Basically, they believe that there's the one divine energy at the top of a hierarchy with lesser beings under that being. This included angels, demons, and other deities. It discussed the existence of things outside time and space, which I thought that was cool, kind of like other dimension type stuff. This labeled followers of this philosophy as pagans or enemies of the church. And as you can imagine, it was frowned upon by Christians and Jews of the time. I thought it was kind of funny that her student, Synesius, would become a bishop in the Christian church and incorporate Neoplatonic principles into the doctrine of the Trinity. So the Trinity has roots from Synesius in Neoplatonism, which I think that's fucking awesome. One thing I really think that is important to say is that she stayed single and celibate to carry on the teachings of Plato about abolishing the family system. She was a fucking rebel, a highly intelligent thorn in the side of Christians and Jews at the time. Imagine a time where women really didn't do what she was doing. She got up in the morning, put on a scholarly robe, and placed herself in a public square, possibly like standing up on something to elevate herself above the crowd. She would speak of Neoplatonism, mathematics, and astronomy to crowds of Alexandrians. She was attractive, intelligent, and was an expert at public speaking. She drew her listeners in, and they drank in every little drop of knowledge that she had to teach. And she continually grew her followers and students. To set the stage properly for what the fuck happened next, I think we need to talk about the politics in the area at the time, that time in history. Okay, so there's a lot of words here, names that I'm probably going to butcher, but Theophilus the First of Alexandria was the 22nd third, fuck me, really? I need more coffee. He was the 23rd Pope of Alexandria. Fuck. In 391, his followers found a secret pagan temple. And to provoke an attack from the pagans, he and his Christian followers mocked and displayed pagan artifacts in public forums. So they went into this sacred temple of some other religion, desecrate, just fucked it up, grabbed the stuff that was on the altars and used for worship, walked him out into public, and made fun of all this shit. So it proved enough to earn a pretty violent response from the pagans, and so they returned the attack and drove pagans out. Now, I just want to pause here and go, I don't know where I've heard this particular, like, war technique before of manipulating public perception, but I do believe that it's being used maybe currently. I don't know. Anywho. I'll just leave you with that. But I don't want to get into too much of current politics, but it just seems like that particular tactic is used over and over and over still today. And it's fucking makes me sick. So anyway, they drove the pagans out. Theophilus destroyed their temple and used this as an example for other pagans. Should they not convert to Christianity, this is the shit that they can look forward to. He also destroyed what was left of the Library of Alexandria, a common tactic of the church to withhold any history that isn't in line with the narrative that they want to promote at the time. Cineas, a student that I was talking about before of Hypatia's, was friends with Theophilus and spared her being associated with the pagans of the opposition and allowed her to study and teach. So even though she was associated with said pagans that got their asses whooped and were doing the quote-unquote evil stuff, because she had political associations, like she was favored by many of the political men in the area, they spared her life. How nice of them. So then comes this person named Cyril, and that is a nephew of Theophilus. And he succeeded his uncle and definitely held on to that grudge and hostility toward any other faith. Like, Christianity was the only way. Every other way deserves nothing but death and destruction. So now comes in a character called Orestes. Orestes, I think is his name. And he was the governor of Alexandria and a newly converted Christian. But he did not have the same views as a lot of the church members, the Christians at that time. He didn't hold the view that the church was equal or above the government. To me, he seemed to have like a separate church and state type view. And this man was like a huge admirer of Hypatia. He went to all of her lectures, admired her beauty and intelligence, and basically pined after her. Cyril and Orestes were two sides to Alexandria, one in favor of free thinking and the other favoring the church and complete control of Alexandria. At some point, there was a massacre of Christians by Jewish extremists. To counter this, Cyril led a crowd and expelled all Jews from Alexandria and then looted their temples and homes. So Cyril basically took it one step further and was like, you can't be Jewish either. Like, before they kind of tolerated it, and now absolutely not. And when I say tolerated, I meant like, they really didn't tolerate it, but it was not as big of a, I don't know, goal of the church at the time. But now it is. So Orestes protested to the Roman government in Constantinople, saying that this was bullshit. Like, hey, Roman government, this guy here, Cyril, is a fucking loose cannon, and he's just killing everybody if they're not, you know, Christian. They don't convert to the Roman church. Cyril then tried to make nice with Orestes, but it was too late for that. Orestes refused to concede to the rule of the church, so Cyril tried to have him assassinated, but he fucked up and failed. So I'm sure that bruised his ego and just made him more pissed off. See, two men fighting caused a lot of things. So he has this bruised ego and is really upset because he couldn't kill Orestes. So Cyril's followers and him turned their attention to Hypatia, the nearest target. She was everything that they hated. She spoke of intelligent ideas that the church wanted no part of being spread to Alexandrians. She was unguarded and vulnerable. So that made her hated and an easy target in their eyes. Her association with Orestes and her being popular sealed her fate. A rumor was spreading around that she was the reason that Cyril and Orestes haven't made peace. Basically, they're like, Cyril and Orestes would be besties if it wasn't for Hypatia. Hypatia's like whispering on Orestes's ear saying, don't make nice. Now, this was not true, but it was enough to ignite like a horrible, horrible event. Yeah. So it went from that rumor to also spreading rumors of her being controlling and using magic to control Orestes, and that she was using satanic magic to keep him from going to church and drawing more followers to her instead of the church. So in comes another character called Peter the Lector, and he formed a mob and went looking for her. Basically, you know, torches and pitchforks and let's go get this woman. During the Christian season of Lent, the mob found Hypatia in her carriage and drug her out of it. They dragged her to a former pagan temple turned church, stripped her of her clothing. Then they used what is translated as oyster shells to cut and scrape her flesh off of the bone and to scoop out her eyeballs. They tore her body into pieces and dragged them to a place called Cenarion and set her body parts on fire. Now, at the time, this time in history, this particular method of, death, torture, and punishment was reserved for the most vile of criminals in the city, which she had not done anything to anyone other than teach and be intelligent. So there's a teeny bit of controversy as to why she was murdered this particular way. Was she murdered because she was technically a pagan and didn't join the church? Or was it because Cyril was a jealous little bitch of her influence over Orestes? I'm thinking the latter, but whatever. So there's a mathematician from Canada, Henri Bilenki. I think that's how you say it. Bilenki. And they argue that Hypatia had been involved in a debate over the Christian holiday of Easter, and that it was supported by the fact that she was killed on the vernal equinox. Other historians disagree, and there's no solid proof right now of the mathematician's hypothesis. However, come on. I don't think it's a coincidence that she was murdered on that specific date, on fucking their supposed Easter in 417. That was the year she died. And so Hypatia was notably the matriarch of astronomy, mathematics, and Neoplatonism philosophy. Her intelligence and popularity was a threat to the church, period. So they created a narrative in which she was using magic to control the governor and sway politics her way. How has humanity not learned that this is the standard for the church and the patriarchy? How has this not fucking changed? It blows my fucking mind when I get into reading all this stuff, and then I liken what's happening, then in the political climate then and what it is like now. How has this not fucking changed? They will turn anyone into a villain if they feel that their precious church and the narrative that they would like to preach to the fucking world has been threatened. no matter what, and no matter who they have to murder in the process. And so that pretty much wraps up the story of Hypatia. Vilified, demonized by the patriarchy and the church, which is the same fucking thing in my eyes for the most part. It's tragic. It's unfortunately not anything, not a story that's original at all. This is going to happen over and over for every episode that I tell, and I'm going to get really pissed. And I realized that last time I got so mad that I was like anti-man and I had to tone it down because my husband was like, bro, it's not me. And I'm like, I get it. I'm just really mad right now. Let me be mad. So then we decided that after each podcast that I record, I'm going to get fucking violently stoned. And that definitely helped. So if any of you are so pissed off that you too feel super violent, I highly recommend, if you're in a state that it's legal, to get violently stoned, and watch something happy. Okay. I started reading a smut book while I was super high. Highly recommend stone smut book reading. I'm just going to leave that there. Please. If you are not on my mailing list, please go to my website, Witchy Woman Podcast, scroll down, click on the join my newsletter thing and join it, because I have a newsletter that comes out every month, tells you about this episode, shit going on. I also have a free online course right now called Guide to Your Energetic Body. It shows you basics. What is your energetic body? What are the different energy centers? And then I go through different oils and stones, crystals, to kind of help balance things. It's a fun course. It's not super long, so you don't have to commit a shitload of time to it. It's also got some worksheets in it for you so that you can kind of get a baseline of your own energetic status, I guess. That's what I want to say. So anyway, I hope that you enjoyed listening to this month's episode. I'm still nervous as fuck, so about this totally flopping. So if you could please share this episode, like this episode on whatever platform you're listening to this on, and also give me a review. Even if it's shitty, I still appreciate reviews. And if you are not a listener of the previous podcast that I had for over 4 years, Witchy Woman Podcast, you can see that also on whatever platform you're listening on, or you can go to my website or Podbean where it is hosted. So with that, I think that's all I got. Oh, wait, we are working on a really a cool idea that Brad and I, my husband, had decided to film. It'll be like a YouTube thing. There'll be clips of it on other social media platforms, but it will be on YouTube, and I'll let you know when it uploads. It takes forever to upload anything out here because we have like terrible upload speeds for our internet. But it is a segment where I call it paganism or the church, and I will tell Brad like something like I don't know, wearing a robe during ritual, I don't know, stuff like that, and he'll have to guess whether that's a pagan ritual or something that happens in church. Some of them are definitely like that one, definitely both, but it's a cool segment, and we're videoing it, so when I get it uploaded, I will let you all know. Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for listening this time. Give me another month and I'll put out another one. And yeah, fuck the patriarchy. Bye-bye.